This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 278 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Hello, Max. How are we?
Doing well, David. Doing well.
We got some good stories this week. We've got a story from our new executive producer of nature stories, Heather, koalas and cows. We've got FAA returns to Kitty Hawk, Lank and hobbyists, Pittsburgh principals, my favorite story of the week of drones masquerading as stealth fighters. So we got a lot of good smorgasbord. What do you think, Max?
Sounds good. Let's get started, David.
And away we go. Our first story comes from the Queensland University of Technology, or QUT.edu. Koala spotting drones proves a flying success. Queensland University of Technology published a study in Nature Journal of Scientific Reports about using drones and those cute little bears they have down under.
Boy, who doesn't love koala bears? I tell you, David, they're so cute. But one thing that scientists want to do is keep track of them. And so what the Queensland University of Technology has been doing is using drones that have infrared imaging sensors on them to try to locate the koalas. And they've been having some success. An interesting thing is there's not just koalas down there underneath the eucalyptus trees. There can be other animals as well. So they've actually developed an algorithm that differentiates the heat signature, I guess, of the koalas from other animals.
But not only do they have heat signatures from koalas, the koalas are tagged with GPS collars. So that's how they used it to verify the data from the drones was. I thought this was kind of cool. They actually knew where the koalas were, but the drones were still able to find them with the infrared to validate the data. The study conducted early morning in the colder months, so the greater difference between koala body heat and background. Koalas tend to be cold. I think that's why they're always clutching humans the way they are. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe our huge listener base down under will give us some more information about koalas and eucalyptus trees. But I was always partial to kookaburras in gum trees, or is that a completely different?
I don't know. I think the koalas clutch all the time, David, because they know they're cute.
Yeah, but they're supposed to be pretty mean.
Yeah, I guess I've heard that.
You know, they're like otters. You know, I have a friend who loves otters. They think they're cute, but otters are kind of mean. So you got to be careful these cute people and cute animals because they might turn on you.
So what they did is they used this drone and they covered the area. They call it in a lawnmower pattern. So up and down, I think, over a specific area. And like you said, David, they were able to confirm that the drone with the heat sensors was effective in identifying the koalas. It's definitely a more efficient method, and it's also less invasive than traditional techniques, which can involve humans going out and surveying and trying to find the koalas.
Dr. Grant Hamilton from QUT's School of Earth, Environment, and Biological Sciences co-authored the study, and he says, and I quote, "On average, an expert koala spotter is going to get about 70% of the koalas in a particular area. We on average get around 86%. That's a substantial increase in accuracy that we need to help protect the threatened species.
How do you become a professional koala spotter, Max?
I don't know. Maybe years of experience? I'm not sure. Well, these researchers, they're now going to take this and sort of expand the area, look for koalas in new areas. And they also note that what they've developed can be used for other threatened species, as well as things like feral pests and that sort of thing. So the algorithm that identifies the animal from the heat signature, they think can be extended or expanded to include other animals. So that will be interesting. That makes this something that's useful in general, not just for koalas.
So, Max, it's hard to believe that we've been doing this show so long that apps have come and gone. We remember how excited we were when the FAA came out with the Before You Fly app. Well, evidently, it needs to be upgraded, and they have turned to Kitty Hawk. And this was from VentureBeat.com. Kitty Hawk to redesign FAA app for drone pilots. Now, we know my Before You Fly app issues were when I used to open it up, it used to scream at me and say things like, "You're joking, right?" Because I lived within 1,000 feet of an airport. But evidently, it had a lot of other issues. So Kitty Hawk is taking over.
Yeah, I'm curious to see just, you know, what they're going to do to this app. But the FAA says that Kitty Hawk is going to redevelop it, quote, to improve the user experience so that now this is the key thing here, so that recreational drone operators know where they can and cannot fly. Now, the FAA says that the current app is still going to be available to us all until the new app is released. We don't know when that's going to be. They also note that the data reflected in the current app will continue to be updated regularly, but they're not going to add any new features. Now, also on Kitty Hawk, they joined the LANCE program last year, the Low Altitude Authorization and Notification Capability. And that's generally used by commercial operators to fly in controlled airspace. That's where you use the app to get authorization. Kind of in our next story sort of relates to that.
Yeah, and I think the next story is from DroneDJ.com. Hobbyist drone pilots will soon be required to use LANC to fly in controlled airspace. So the FAA Reauthorization Act of 2018 establishes new conditions for recreational use of drones. It immediately repeals the special rule for model aircraft.
And then last October 2018, the FAA published a news item, and they said they were evaluating the impacts of this rule change. Now, previously, and this is how Drone DJ explains this. Previously, hobbyists flying in controlled airspace had to, quote, notify the air traffic control tower. But the new language from the authorization bill says in Class B, Class C, or Class D airspace, or within the lateral boundaries of the surface area of Class E airspace designated for an airport, the operator obtains prior authorization, not notification, authorization from the administrator or designee before operating and complies with all airspace restrictions and prohibitions. So Drone DJ here, they're speculating something.
They're speculating that the low altitude authorization and notification capability, or LANC, that we just talked about is going to be for all hobbyists, which explains why the app is getting updated, because it sounds like Kitty Hawk is going to update the app so that hobbyists can use the app to get the authorization. That would be my assumption, taking it two steps down the pike. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, it kind of fits. But we'll have to see. I mean, it just could be these things happen to line up this way. But it does look like there's a requirement for the FAA to get authorization from users rather than notification. And, you know, this system is, it kind of makes sense that that would be the system that you would use to do that. It exists already. There are a number of companies, obviously, besides Kitty Hawk, who are authorized to provide that service. But I think they're going to use Kitty Hawk in the Before You Fly app to set up a process by which you can obtain authorization.
It sounds like a reasonable expectation. I know that the Academy of Model Aeronautics has been struggling with the fact that, you know, aircraft, they've been dealing with flying their aircraft without any issues for years. But now that we have all of the drones, they are going to need to roll into the situation. That being said, at least the FAA is trying to make it commercially viable to be simple for those people to get their authorizations to fly. So I guess we will see what will happen. Now, if anybody in the FAA who listens to this, or Kitty Hawk, or who needs beta testing or wants us to look at the app when it comes out, let us know, because I'm really curious to see what comes of this. You know, I might get my micro quad, you know, out in the airspace, and I might want that authorization. So shall we move on to the next story that you sort of yelled at me in the show notes about?
I did. Yeah. It's a Pennsylvania story.
It is, and it is about autonomous vehicles or autonomous cars. But I thought it was something that we probably should talk about, because you could probably use it for any autonomous vehicle. And this is from AUVSI, which is, you know, one of our sources. Pittsburgh mayor announces the Pittsburgh principles for autonomous vehicles. So Mayor William Peduto issued an executive order known as the Pittsburgh principles. I thought this was interesting, Max.
Yeah. Apparently this order, it outlines the objectives that Pittsburgh has and the expectations they have for safe testing of autonomous vehicles. And it also assigns responsibilities for the development of transparent and constructive reporting guidelines. So I guess what the city of Pittsburgh, or the mayor anyway, is doing is observing maybe the activity, the autonomous vehicle activity that's going on really around the country, and maybe in Pittsburgh as well, and proactively establishing some expectations, some guidelines.
Well, a little background. Pittsburgh is rapidly becoming a very, computer-centric, high-tech city. So it wouldn't surprise me that automated cars would be tested there. Given the way the city's culture has changed, it's becoming quite a high-tech city. So Mayor Proto said, quote, "Autonomous vehicle technology has the potential to dramatically improve safety on our city streets and yield transformative benefits to equitable access and quality of life in our city. This can only happen when industry, agencies, and people understand one another and work together." So I guess part of this is setting up the principles, but part of it is opening up the door to these tech companies to come in and test their wares in Pittsburgh.
And as we've seen in other examples, I can think of some police departments where this has been the case, where it's proven to be really problematic if an agency, let's say, comes in with the idea of using drones for some purpose and doesn't have a lot of dialogue with other agencies or with the public. So from that standpoint, I think this makes a lot of sense. The mayor is in part saying we need to talk about this and make sure that we're coordinated and we understand and everything is transparent. So from that standpoint, I think it sounds pretty good, pretty encouraging.
Well, our next story comes from Myanmar. Myanmar court sentences Frenchman to jail for flying drone. And this was from the New York Times. So if by the time you listen to this, it's behind the paywall, we're sorry. But Max, what happened in Myanmar?
Well, we had a French tourist and he came in with a drone into the country and he flew it close to the parliament complex near the capital there. And that's not good. I think maybe there's two things here. I think maybe it's flying it in what is probably a restricted area for drones, and also maybe in bringing it into the country. But he was charged under the Illegal Export-Import Act. And under that, he could have been sentenced to a maximum penalty of 3 years imprisonment. But that's not going to happen in this case.
Now, the court sentenced him to 1 month in prison with hard labor, minus time served. So he might be released after a week. And that was on March 8th, because he was also jailed while waiting for the trial. But it's one thing bringing your drone to another country, but really flying it near a parliamentary, common sense would prevail that that was a really dumb idea.
Yeah, and as we know, the regulations for flying unmanned aircraft vary dramatically from country to country, or they can. And I would never consider bringing a drone into another country without first doing a little bit of investigation to determine what those rules are there. You don't want to just walk into a place and break the rules without realizing it. I think in this case, the court determined that here this poor French tourist was not planning anything malicious. It was just a case of ignorance. So I think that contributed to maybe a light sentence. But when I first saw the headline, David, I got all excited because I thought, oh man, they finally caught one of the jerks who's been flying drones around airports trying to get video of airliners taking off or landing. But this is kind of a little bit different.
Yeah, but he deserved to be busted. You just common sense, folks. You know that Max and I loathe the fact that people do things stupid. And don't be like this. You're going to, Myanmar, or, you're going to get thrown in jail. And it's not a good thing. So we'll add this one to the You're Grounded file.
But, also, David, notice that he sat in jail this whole time. So whereas maybe in other places, if you get arrested, like he was arrested, you can post bond and that sort of thing. But, you don't want to fool around in some places with breaking the law. So he apparently sat in prison for 3 weeks and he's got, one more week. Being in jail for 4 weeks, David, that's a great way to really ruin your vacation and, maybe a few other things as well. So it really pays to understand what the rules are before you go.
Absolutely. So we talked about koalas. Let's talk about Texas koalas. Okay. Well, not Texas koalas, but how about cows? In this moving story about livestock, this is from myhighplains.com. Drones expected to reduce antibiotics in livestock. I thought this was kind of an interesting way to use a drone, is to locate the sick ones before they infect everybody else.
It is. And again, this is a use of thermal imaging sensors on a drone. And we've certainly seen that used in agriculture for crops. This might be the first time that kind of approach has been used for livestock. But the idea here is that if you use this to identify specific animals that need antibiotics, then you can just target those animals for the injection. Otherwise, you can find yourself in a situation or the what do you call a cattle farmer?
A cowboy?
The rancher.
A rancher?
Okay. That's it. That's the word I'm looking for. Boy. Otherwise, the rancher may have to inject an entire herd with antibiotics. And of course, these days especially, we like our food to be as free from that kind of thing as possible. So using a drone to identify hot spots on cattle that are infected or sick or something like that, then you can just target them with the antibiotic injection. So I think this is another great application.
But Max, to be serious, I was thinking about this story in depth, and shout out to Heather. She makes me think about these things. I really needed this drone to be small and to fly around my former office.
Why is that?
So that whoever's bringing their contagion from home or their elementary school students into the office, that they could be targeted with antibiotics.
Oh,
you just so they don't get the whole building sick. I think the whole cattle herd mentality, picking out the ones that are need to have the injections, I think we need to carry that over to like the office environment. Just
so if you do this with livestock, why not do it with employees?
That's right. I'm all for that. You know, I'm not a germaphobe, but you know what? If we can minimize people being sick and increase productivity, let's all for it. Yes, folks, that was a joke, just so you know. Well, Max, I know on Monday we talked about F-117s on the Airplane Geeks. And if anybody knows me, they know that the F-117 happens to be one, if not in the top five, of my favorite aircraft of all time. So it's kind of nice when the story from Monday on Airplane Geeks carries over to Wednesday.
Mm.
And this is from our friend Tyler on thedrive.com or the War Zone. Pocket force of stealthy Avenger drones may have made returning F-117s back to service unnecessary. Now, a little background was the F-117 was retired about 10 years ago, but put in storage where they've been keeping four or five or six flyable all this time. And every so often, you see an F-117 suddenly show up and people take pictures of it and say, ooh, they're still flying out of Area 51 north of Las Vegas. As we record this on March 7th, the week before the last week in February, first week in March, there were a lot of sightings of at least one F-117 flying around Death Valley and the area. And that led to a story by Scramble in the Netherlands that possibly four F-117s were used in the north of Syria and Iraq. However, after giving a really detailed analysis on why that might have happened, even though it probably didn't, Tyler came back with another story saying that maybe it wasn't F-117s, but Predator Cs or Avengers made by General Atomics that actually were flying the clandestine missions over Iraq.
So do you think they were flying sort of independent missions or as wingmen for manned aircraft? Any thoughts?
Well, the Avenger is not a wingman. Actually, it's a jet development of the Predator and the Reaper.
Which are not jets, right?
Which are not jets. Those are both turboprops. The Avenger was the next step on. Now, the Avenger is actually given the designation of Q-11, which It may have been operated. It's not officially operated by the United States Air Force, but it might be operated by the Central Intelligence Agency, or the CIA, as a civilian-operated aircraft. The advantage of the Avenger, where manned aircraft doesn't have, is the Avenger is able to laser designate for laser-guided bombs. That's a technology that currently is not in the U.S. inventory. The F-35 will have the capability to do it again, but right now, F-22s and other aircraft do not have the ability to designate, laser designate targets. They use GPS bombs, which are perfectly fine for a stationary target. But if you want to hit a moving truck, it's better to use a laser-guided bomb so you can pinpoint the bomb onto the moving target. The 18-hour loiter time for an Avenger C means that there's a lot of time for it to be orbiting to find these moving high-value targets. So definitely read this story and the previous story, because it's kind of interesting that we have a non-official product being deployed for special operations and a little bit of spycraft involved, I guess I would say, Max.
Hmm. Boy, this sounds like more military unmanned news than we've had in quite a while, David.
Well, yeah, but we try to stay, in all fairness, we do try to stay away from military news, because that's why we started this show in the first place, was we didn't want to hear about predators and reapers dropping bombs on people. But we have a lot of good stories. Now, if you'd like to be like Heather and contribute stories to us, I would really want you to send us your stories, especially stories that we might not get to see over here globally. I know we have a big Australian component that sends us stories, but South America or the Middle East or Europe, we're looking to hear from what's going on with the drone world, because this is a global podcast. We don't just like talking about the FAA, even though we are here based in the United States. So send us your stories to feedback@theuavdigest.com.
That's right. And of course, you can find our website at theuavdigest.com, where we have show notes for each episode, as well as how you can find us on social media and all those things. Of course, this episode, when we publish it, it'll be up at the top. But of course, with each episode, it will drop down below. So if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, well, that's theuavdigest.com/278.
And of course, where else can you find us? You can find us on our Slack listener team. We want you to become part of the team and join the conversation so we can learn more about it. You can become part of the Slack listener team by asking for an invite. You can send it to feedback@theuavdigest.com. You can also find us on the internet at Twitter, UAV Digest. Facebook, it's uavdigest.com. And of course, you can find both Max Flight and I on LinkedIn, where we try to scour the globe looking for those more professional reports. So I guess with that, I'm going to say this is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.